Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week's guest is Kansas Senator Roger Marshall, who joins us to discuss budget reconciliation, tariffs, and how agriculture could be affected by the Make America Healthy Again movement. But first, here's this week's headlines. The overall cost for grocery prices dropped by nearly 0.5% last month, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. Egg prices dropped by more than 12% in March, partially because of a downturn in the bird flu outbreak. However, prices remain about 49% higher than this time last year. Prices for pork, chicken, cereals, dairy products, and fruits and vegetables were also lower last month. On the trade front, China and the United States have lowered tariffs on each other for an initial 90-day period to give way for additional negotiations. The U.S. reduced reciprocal tariffs on China from 125% to 10%. China did the same with its retaliatory tariffs. China also agreed to remove non-tariff trade barriers and restrictions imposed on American products since April 2nd. President Trump also announced what he calls a historic trade deal between the U.S. and the United Kingdom. Part of that deal calls for the U.K. to remove tariffs on some American ethanol exports and grant some American beef products tariff-free access to the U.K. if it meets the nation's food standards. House Republicans have advanced major pieces of their massive budget bill, including expanded tax benefits for farmers and small businesses. The House Ag Committee's portion of the budget bill would cut about $290 billion from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, while using $60 billion of savings to pay for some farm bill programs, including an increase in price loss coverage reference prices and more funding for trade promotion programs. Republicans fought off Democratic attacks on a plan to make states pay for a portion of SNAP benefits for the first time in the program's history. Currently, the federal government pays for 100% of the program, while states split the administrative costs 50-50. Starting in 2028, states would pay between 5% and 25% of the benefit costs determined by their SNAP error rates. An AgriPulse analysis found that some states, both red and blue, would face over $1 billion in costs under this proposal. Roger Marshall is a Republican senator from Kansas. We ask him how the state SNAP cost share proposal could fare in the Senate.
We're blessed to live in a country where nobody should have to go to bed hungry. There's plenty of food out there. We need to make sure we get it to the people that need it the most. But since we wrote the last farm bill, federal government spending on food programs has went from $60 to $180 billion a year. So typically you think about SNAP programs, a lot of that's through the farm bill. And part of the farm bill is also crop insurance, and it's also reference prices, the Title I funding. So we're trying to figure out, how do we get some money to increase funding for crop insurance? How do we get some money to help the farmers with the Title I funding, with the reference price issue as well? So again, the big picture, probably 85% of a farm bill is nutrition. The farmer gets 5% of the program. So I think we're trying to ask the states to be a little bit more efficient with the food that they're giving out, and making sure that nobody goes hungry. But at the same time, I'm trying to find some money to help our farmers out there who are growing the food.
So do you think that state SNAP cost share proposal specifically will survive in the Senate, or that's something that when your committee marks up could be removed?
Oh, I don't have an answer for that yet. And it's something that we've not had a deep dive. To me, is I have to know what the whole big picture here. I'm trying to look through the eyes of a farmer and a rancher when I look at these decisions, rather than just on the other end of the food chain as well. It makes more sense to me for the state to have more skin in the game. I think if they do, there's going to be more efficiencies and they're going to be more careful.
And the House bill also includes cuts to Medicaid that could hit rural health providers especially hard. Will the Senate, will you support those?
Yeah, so yesterday I would not describe these as cuts. I would describe them as savings, that we are doing everything we can to preserve and protect Medicaid for those who need it the most. So again, we go back to these eligibility requirements. How about a work requirement? 80% of Americans support a work requirement. And all we're asking for is in a four-week time span is that if you're on food stamps, if you're on Medicaid, is that you volunteer, work, or go to school for 80 hours in that month. So 20 hours a week. And by the way, I think that's a great thing. I think giving people a hand up rather than handouts, great. I think a job is the best safety net in the country.
Democrats say that cutting nutrition assistance to fund farm programs is going to make it harder to pass the rest of the farm bill that later this Congress. Should farmers be concerned that this is breaking the urban-rural coalition that has traditionally been needed to pass a farm bill?
You know, only in Washington, D.C. could you say slowing the spending is a cut. So no one is cutting the spending in Medicaid. No one is cutting the spending in the SNAP programs. We're slowing the rate of increase. Again, we tripled the food programs. We went from $60 to $180 billion. Meanwhile, to help with crop insurance and reference prices haven't changed in, I think, 6 or 7 years. So I'm seeing this through the eyes of the farmers. We want to put farm back in the farm bill. It's farmers first.
We'll be back with more from Senator Roger Marshall right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says the new dietary guidelines will be released by August. We asked Senator Roger Marshall how the new guidelines could be different from previous versions.
I look for getting whole foods back into the schools, getting rid of packaged foods. It's interesting. I talked to my kids, well, what does a nutritious diet look like in today's terms? And they said, Dad, it's what you grew up on. You know, we had our own chickens. We had our own gardens. My granddad brought milk to us twice a week from our family dairy. So I think it's getting back to healthy foods. And I just have to think that farmers and ranchers will respond to this and grow those more nutritious foods. I mean, all over the state, what I'm trying to communicate to Secretary Kennedy is, look, we've been doing regenerative agriculture for decades. We've been doing paying attention to soil health for decades. We're going in the right direction. And I think that's going to put us in really good shape when it comes to these new dietary guidelines.
And one of the leaders of the Make America Healthy Again movement is Casey Means, who blames the use of pesticides for a long list of health problems. She's now been nominated to be Surgeon General. Are you concerned about how she's going to use that job if she gets it?
Yeah, so I think this is why important that agriculture has a seat at the table. That's why I'm leading the Mohawk Caucus. I'm actually leading the caucus. I'm in communication with Secretary Kennedy almost on a couple times a week basis. Casey Means and I are communicating to each other now as well. I'd encourage people to read her books just to kind of know where she's coming from. But the great news is I can push back. So many things that they talk about, they don't realize agriculture is doing, that we're growing so much more with less because of precision agriculture. They have no idea what we're doing out there when it comes to using less pesticides. So rather than, you know, so much the old-fashioned crop dusting or blanketing the field with Roundup, now we're using less and less. We don't use Roundup to kill crops, at least very, very seldom. They think we're still doing that. They don't understand that in most of my state, you know, we're going to the feedlot, we're going to the dairy, we're getting that manure, bringing it back to the field where the cover crop is, and then we're putting cattle on that for the winter. And I mean, all these things are things they're acting like is new science, but these are things that we grew up doing. Kansas farmers and ranchers have been doing them from decades.
As we wrap up here, I want to turn to trade. The president of the American Soybean Association told senators this week that agriculture could be headed toward a 1980s level crisis, farm crisis, because of the downturn in commodities and the threat of trade wars. Are farmers right to be worried right now?
Goodness, you know, the sky is falling. I just, you know, people act like that when they make blanket statements like that. All they do is hurt the President Trump's negotiating skills right now. And I understand, you know, maybe over 50% of the soybean crop goes to China. But what we've been doing before is not working. Record drop in net farm income. Is that person suggesting we should just keep doing what we've been doing? You know, President Trump just gave American agriculture $10 billion. And I know almost like a half million of that went to a half billion of that went to Kansas farmers. So he's doing everything he can to help us get us through this type of problem. What I'm asking the White House for is to give us alternatives. Look, we'll never be able to depend on China. Your person that made that statement, ask him how the market has been with China and soybeans the last decade. It's up, it's down, it's unpredictable. Why do we want to keep doing what we've been doing? Instead, I think the big opportunities out there are year-round E15, and then there's a tax credit called 45Z, which allows us to take those soybeans and turn them into jet fuel. That has the potential for 10 times all the amount of soybeans grown in this country right now. We could take 10 times that amount and turn it into jet fuel once we get the infrastructure built to do that. So I think it's very short-sighted.
Senator Marshall, thank you so much for joining us.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at state SNAP error rates in this week's Map It Out.
The government makes billions of dollars worth of improper SNAP benefit payments each year. These are payments that either shouldn't have been made at all or were made in the wrong amount. This map breaks down the SNAP payments error rates by state from fiscal year 2023. It is important to note that the error rates are calculated by adding up the combined totals of both overpayments and underpayments. Not every case is an overpayment. Alaska has the most incorrect payments by a large margin. More than 60% were categorized as incorrect. Second is New Jersey, with 35%. South Carolina, Delaware, Hawaii, and the District of Columbia all have error rates of more than 20%. This all comes as House Ag Committee Republicans are proposing to cut nearly $300 billion from nutrition assistance spending over the next 10 years in the Ag Committee's part of the reconciliation bill, a number that has left Democrats extremely frustrated. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place June 10th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register with the QR code on your screen or under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. This week's panel discussion will focus on budget reconciliation and trade. We're joined by John Weber with Monument Advocacy and Sharon Bomer-Lawrenson with Ag Trade Strategies, LLC. John, we'll begin with you. The House Ag Committee completed their work on the GOP budget bill, which cuts nutrition assistance spending and uses some of the money to fund farm bill programs. How do you see these cuts to SNAP faring in the Senate?
Yes, certainly. And, you know, Chairman Thompson was dealt a much more challenging hand in the budget instructions that he received. But the CBO has now confirmed that he met that, which was a tall task. And they had to get quite creative in terms of the provisions that they piled together to meet the $230 billion in deficit reduction while also having those investments. You know, we're seeing some signs from the Senate that the state cost share provision has some concerns from states. From senators on the committee, that seems to be getting the most attention. The big question is obviously the instructions to the Senate Ag Committee were much lower. Chairman Bozeman's been clear that that will be above $1 billion, but what that number is very important. And I think what they can agree to will have a huge determining impact on what they can do in terms of policy below that. So it's a big open question mark at this point. It seems like the greatest attention is on the state cost share, but watching the House Ag Committee markup yesterday, there was a lot of member interest in shifting a bit of accountability to the states. What that looks like, I think, varies, but having states more engaged in the process seemed to be a central theme.
Very broadly, the GOP budget bill extends and expands many of the expiring tax provisions as well. How do you see these benefiting farmers?
Yeah, certainly. If there was one winner out of the tax markup, I think it was rural America and farmers. In an era where almost everything in the Inflation Reduction Act was taking a haircut or being fully eliminated, one, we saw an expansion in the 45C tax credit from an extremely conservative body that's been critical of the IRA. I think that's a huge signal to the Senate of the importance of rural America and biofuels. And then if you look at the on-farm priorities going down the list, the permanency and the certainty that it offered for the top priorities for growers were incredible. Permanency and an expansion of 199A for pass-throughs, no touching of the C-Corp rate, bonus depreciation, certainty on estate tax and gift tax going forward, and even, some new provisions, which are really rare in this, hats off to Congressman Feenstra. An inclusion of the ACRE Act to lower interest costs for rural borrowers was included for the first time in that bill. And those are some, big wins and a sure sign that, the rural members on the Ways and Means Committee and Chairman Smith have that background and really have made that a central theme. And I think that's a strong signal to the Senate as they continue to push forward.
And Sharon, outside of Congress, the U.S. recently agreed to a trade deal with the United Kingdom. How do you see this deal specifically benefiting farmers?
Specifics of the deal clearly show that ethanol is a big winner, and I think that's very positive, obviously, for our corn farmers. And we would hope that implementation of that tariff rate quota is fairly soon. China is a little bit more difficult, and I don't expect implications of the UK agreement to in any way foreshadow China. The other piece of the UK deal, obviously, is beef. I know our cattle industry is very excited about it. I think it is a very nice size quota of 13,000 tons, but obviously the UK has requirements on how the cattle are raised. And so I think our industry to take advantage of that quota would need to make some adjustments as some of the producers do for the EU market.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you Yes. asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. The U.S. and China recently agreed to lower tariffs, and the U.S. made a trade deal with the United Kingdom. We asked Sharon Bomer-Lawrenson with Ag Trade Strategies, LLC, how she sees the progress foreshadowing the administration's future trade negotiations.
So certainly I think the U.K. is a good example of what we can expect going forward. And we know that the administration is busy negotiating these types of framework agreements with over 20 different countries that have come to the table and are very keen on trying to lower what the president calls reciprocal tariffs, which are well above our most favored nation tariffs going forward. So negotiations are very active. The U.S. agriculture community has probably inundated our trade negotiators with a whole list of not just tariff issues, but non-tariff barriers that clearly are a priority for the president and the U.S. trade representative to try and move forward and resolve.
And John, turning back to you, many Democrats say that cutting SNAP to pay for farm programs in this budget bill will make it impossible to pass a farm bill later this year. Are you also concerned about this?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a concern for a lot of folks, and budget reconciliation is an unconventional way of moving a farm bill forward. Certainly, it's not unprecedented to touch farm bill programs. We saw that obviously in the IRA and the continuation of that in the conservation programs today. But it's a big question mark going forward. Some would view what was passed out of the House Ag Committee as largely a farm bill. Chairman Thompson was very aggressive in terms of the investments that he made across the board. Now there's a little bit of an expectation management point of what can survive the Byrd rule in the Senate. And I think, what's going to be telling is what can come through on a final package in terms of investments, what's left on the table. There's certainly been some options outlined in terms of a skinny suspension level bipartisan package that they could move forward. But anything that would bring the coalition back together has to get 60 votes in the Senate. And because this is an unprecedented approach, no one can say for certain where that's going to go.
And Sharon, on Capitol Hill this week, American Soybean Association President Caleb Ragland told the Senate Finance Committee that U.S. trade policies are putting farmers on course for a 1980s level crisis. Do you think these policies are really putting farm country on the path to crisis?
If you look at the trade statistics, and this is particularly true for soybeans, they are getting hit hard in their largest export market of China. Between 2023 and 2024, their exports were down $2.5 billion. And just in the 3 months, January to March of this year, compared to last year, those exports are down another $2 billion. So that's a huge hit. Other ag sectors are also being hurt in China. And I would say that's the biggest issue right now is the trade relationship with China. But we've also had huge drop-offs in cotton and sorghum, pistachios, and some of the nuts. I think for the other countries, I find it hard to see where the president will back away from the new additional 10% tariff, except for maybe some of our free trade agreements. But I would see that as having less of an impact, negative impact on American farmers than what's happening with China.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at how American beef import quotas will be impacted by the new trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
President Trump has unveiled what his administration says is the first of a series of trade deals that will secure concessions in exchange for relief from American tariffs. Part of the new U.S.-UK deal calls for the U.K. to eliminate tariffs on some American ethanol exports and grant some American beef products tariff-free access to the U.K. if they meet U.K. food standards. In return, the U.S. will ease tariffs for a similar amount of beef from the U.K. The president hopes this decision will allow American exporters to finally get a foothold in the UK beef market. This chart shows American beef import quotas in metric tons so far this year. Australia's share sits at more than 378,000 metric tons. New Zealand's is more than 213,000 metric tons. Then there is a 65,000 metric ton quota that has been shared by a group of countries, including Brazil. Under the new deal, the U.S. will allocate 13,000 metric tons of that to U.K. beef. However, this decision may be against the rules of the World Trade Organization. The quota was negotiated at the WTO, and the rules require countries to talk with other quota users before making any adjustments. It could also be seen as discrimination against other countries, which would break another WTO rule. You can read more on the deal and the issues that could arise from it in one of trade editor Oliver Ward's most recent stories on our website, agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place June 10th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register with the QR code on your screen or under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for next week. Both the House and Senate will be in session. Speaker Mike Johnson wants to pass the budget reconciliation bill through the full House next week before Congress departs for Memorial Day week-long recess. On Wednesday, the Senate Ag Committee will hold a hearing with USDA Undersecretary nominees. Plus, AgriPulse is hosting a webinar Monday discussing how thoroughbred racing fuels rural economies. Sign up for free on our website. And sign up is open for the AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in Sacramento, California. On June 10th, you can gain insights on water issues, the ag economy, and perspectives from the California Capitol, from industry leaders and lawmakers. To sign up, visit the Events tab on our website. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.